As a new dawn breaks, our world is confronted with a cacophony of issues. We wake up to complicated issues brought about by human relationships and interactions. Sometimes it takes a freshly brewed coffee to perk the mind up and an intelligent discussion of relevant issues to clear up your perspective. Welcome to In Coffee Veritas, a podcast designed to make your morning more productive and enriching. Join our host, John Dale May Garcia, as she presents an accurate perspective of current issues. So what are you waiting for? Start your morning right with In Coffee Veritas.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our podcast, In Coffee Veritas, where we feature interesting personalities in the field of law and legal issues that are relevant in our society today. It's heartwarming to know that there are still a number of young lawyers who have chosen what has become the road less taken. Our guests tonight, all young lawyers, were part of the 1,724 who passed the bar examinations 3 years ago. They all have chosen private practice and have no regrets.
We have four of the brightest and promising trial lawyers in Western Visayas: attorneys Kyle Dinopol, Karen Kabuslay, Ryan Anatan, and Salvador Alba II, to share with us why they chose to become litigators and private practitioners. So we are interviewing our guest lawyers over Zoom. Attorneys Dinopol and Anatan are based in Iloilo City, while attorneys Alba and Kabuslay are currently in Capiz. Hopefully, the internet signal will be kind to us. Hello, attorneys Sal, Kyle, Ryan, and Karen. Attorneys Sal and Kyle are classmates, and so are attorneys Ryan and Karen. It is nice to know that all of you were law school classmates, and this interview seems to be a reunion of sorts for you guys. Attorney Kyle, despite your hectic schedules, are you guys still in touch with each other?
Okay, so I think the last time that I was able to talk to my batchmates were during IBP event. So I think that was the only time that we can all get together if we are all in the same convention. Mm-hmm. Because Attorney Sal actually is from Capiz, so that's why we were not able to meet physically, especially before after COVID. And as for the others, I get to meet them during conventions, but we only, we say hi, hello during these conventions and we get to talk. I think most of the time I meet Attorney Ryan in court. We usually see each other.
Let us go back down memory lane. Of course, April 26, 2018 was a very memorable month for all of you. Attorney Karen, I heard you were with your family during that time. Can you describe the feeling of waiting for the results?
Okay, so at the time the results was about to be released, I was already working as a legal researcher with the Office of the Provincial Prosecutor in Antique. So my colleagues and I were also barristers and we were all waiting for the results. So we decided to take a leave from work on the day of the result. So we went home to our respective family with our respective families. I called up my parents, so they went to meet me and my tito. Then the day of the releasing the results, we decided to visit different churches from Iloilo City to Miag'ao. So Miag'ao was supposed to be our last stop because it is mother's hometown. And just before we reached Miag'ao Church, we received the call that last. At first, I can't believe that it's really true. I asked my mother to really check if my name was really there. So yeah, we're also happy and ecstatic and can't believe that it's really happening. past. So, it's a happy moment because it's all of my parents and my loved ones.
With a good showing of your law school having a bar top naturally the previous year, tell me, Attorney Ryan, was there any doubt in your mind that you will pass the bar exam?
Actually, I did not really think that I will pass the bar.
All right? Really?
Because during the bar examinations, the chairman of the bar committee would, I think that would that was Bersamin, you know. The chairman of the bar committee would go to our room, no? And he would tell us always, or whenever he comes to our room, he would always tell us that I will fill in the entire Philippine arena with outtakers. It would be 100% according to him. All right. So our hopes were really high that time. And then come this bar result day, I believe that was April 26, if I'm not mistaken, right? April 26, 2018. I cannot forget that because it was also the same day when the Boracay Island was closed. All right? Yes, yes. When the Duterte administration closed Boracay, all right? For 6 months, I don't know if it was extended, but it was for 6 months at least, right? So on the day of the bar result, or when it came out, they what do you call that, they let the result known on a staggered basis, you know what I mean. Is they don't just show you the result in just one time, you know. First they would post the top 20. At that time there were top 20, not top 10 only, right? They would post the name. So those 20 people already knew that they passed the bar, right? So it's already a celebration for them, right?
20 souls anyway,
believed. Yeah, exactly. And then they would publish or post another that was the percentage of the bar examination result, or the passers, I mean. So remember, during the bar examination, they said it would be 100%, right?
Yeah.
And then during the bar result day, you know, it was only 25% or 20%. During that time, my hopes was were really I was really down. By the way, what I was doing during that time is I was playing a game, an online game. I was not even in the house. I was at the computer shop. I don't want to see the result from the moment I saw the percentage that it was 25%, or even though I'm not really sure, I don't really want to see the result. And I did not really look at the result because I think it was published or showed to us, I think at around 12 o'clock, not really sure, or 1 o'clock. And then I think I look at it after my game. I played my game first. And that would, my game lasted for more or less 1 hour, right? Or maybe 2 hours. Maybe I played two games. I cannot really remember during that time. And I look at it after 2 hours or 1 hour, and then I saw my name in it, right? You know what? When I took the bar, my mindset was actually whether I did not think that I will pass. I did not really think that I will not pass. I didn't really care about it. What my mindset was, I'm going to take the bar, because if I don't take the bar, I will not pass. All right, that was my mindset. So I'll just take the bar because I'll give my chance to pass the bar if I take it.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Attorney Sal, what was your first reaction when you knew that you passed the bar exam?
I was very happy. You know, passing the bar was one of the happiest moments in my life. I was also happy that most of my friends in law school also passed. But I also felt sad because some of my friends who also took the bar, did not make it that year.
So it's like mixed emotions. Huh?
Yes.
How about you, Attorney Kyle? What was the first thing that the Attorney Kyle Di Noble did after she heard she's already a lawyer?
After I heard. Okay, so I think the thing that I can remember is during our time when our results came out, I believe it was about, the initial announcement from the Supreme Court was it was supposed to come out before lunch. I think that was around 11 to 12. So we were there with my family. I was waiting for the results. And in fact, my sister, who was working in Manila, had to travel from Makati to Padre Faura so that we get the news from her directly and we don't have to wait for the news because, of course, several people are waiting for the results. So we wanted a point person there in Supreme Court. But it turns out that it was moved to, I think, after lunch, 1:30 around that time, 1 to 1:30. So I think the first thing that I did when I knew that I passed was I ate my lunch because I was not able to eat prior because I was waiting for the news. Okay, so at that time, I was not able to eat and just waiting and refreshing my phone. But the next thing that I knew when I passed, I said, finally, I can eat my lunch. So I ate. And then I think that was April 26th of 2018. I went to the cathedral. That's it. In the afternoon, I lighted a candle there because I also lighted a candle before I went to the bar.
I am sure your horizons have broadened the moment you became a lawyer. Did you entertain the idea of working in the big city, the big firms in Metro Manila, Attorney Karen?
For me, it was really not an option at that time to work in Manila because first, I wanted to practice my profession here in the province because this is where my family are all staying. So primarily, I wanted to give my parents a sense of pride that they have a daughter working here as a lawyer. So that's one. And second, I think I'm not ready to start my practice in a big city because I experienced firsthand the problems in Manila, primarily traffic problems and also the lack of fresh food, right? So I'm not really used to that kind of living, way of living.
All right, so how about you, Attorney Ryan? Did the thought of joining government service cross your mind?
Actually, when I passed the bar, I did not really think of joining the government or the PAO or any government agency or the prosecution service or whatever government agency that is. I didn't really think about that. What I thought of during that time was just to, of course, take my oath, sign the role of attorneys first, and then join any law firm, right? Yes, whether it's a well-known law firm or not, I'll just just join any law firm. And my what I want really to do is to join the private practice, right? not to join the government service. Of course, during the course of my practice, in my 3 years experience in the law profession, I've thought of joining the government service sometimes, you know. But when I passed the bar, I didn't really think about that.
Attorney Kyle, your father is Attorney Daniel Di Noble, is a veteran lawyer in the city. So was he instrumental to your decision to go into private practice?
Yes, I think I think I can answer that with certainty that he's really instrumental in that decision. I think he was instrumental in two things. He was instrumental in first, my decision to enter law school and become a lawyer. And then second, my decision to choose private practice and stay in private practice. I would have to say stay because, of course, there are certain things that a new lawyer would also consider. Like after you enter private practice, it would be just a few months or a few years. And then you will decide to enter another kind of... take another road in that, for example, the government. So he was instrumental in that decision to choose private practice and stay in private practice. So I think I was able to see that in his work ethic and his work in general as a private practicing lawyer. So he is in the practice for almost 30, because it's the same age as my brother, our oldest brother.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 35 years now. So when I was growing up, he was already doing that, and he was in the middle of his practicing law. And I think that was very, in a way, it rubbed into me.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that answer, Attorney. The next question would be, most new lawyers have applied with the PAO and other government offices. They said that the financial stability is ensured from day one when you are a government lawyer. Do you agree with this, Attorney Karen?
I think, especially during this pandemic, yes, being in the government service is really, will really give you stability, financial stability at least. But however, when you're in private practice, you can also attain the same level of stability, if not more, if you are just focused and also efficient on your goals. So there are I think it also depends on your personality and your perspective. But yes, I agree. It is really more stable because you will have a steady source of income. But in the private practice, you can still achieve that level of stability if you just work hard.
Attorney Ryan, you joined the law office soon after you passed the bar. Did you have any second thoughts when you found out that there was no guaranteed salary every 15th and 30th day of the month?
Actually, just like what I said, mm-hmm. when I passed the bar, my mindset was really to join any law firm, any private law firm. I didn't really want to join the government service. So mm-hmm. I actually knew what I signed up for. Mm-hmm. I knew that there was no salary. There was no fixed salary. I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really bother me at all. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's really what I want since day one. And luckily, I'm still in the private practice after 3 years.
So it makes me think that what is it with private practice that it really makes you want to get into it rather than the government service?
Actually, I don't really know also. Uh-huh. But after being in private practice for 3 years, I can say that my decision was somehow correct, right? Because it's actually been fun.
Okay.
You know? Yeah, meeting a lot of people, having a lot of opportunities,
mm-hmm.
right? And being anywhere actually, mm-hmm. and being able to wake up at any time you want.
Okay.
As long, of course, that you don't have any hearings or any appointment. Right?
Okay.
And as long as your boss doesn't call you that he needs you or something like that. Good thing that I have I have a good boss that doesn't require my presence all the time. Right?
Attorney Sal, I can picture you on your first day on the job at the bottom of the food chain, so to speak. You are the new guy in the law office. How was the adjustment period for you?
It was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Learning the ropes of private practice takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And I started my law career in a law firm with senior mm-hmm. lawyers in Iloilo.
Okay.
Eventually, I transferred to the law office of Attorney Andrew De La Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Until I decided to go back in Rojas City for a year before the pandemic. The senior lawyers
mm-hmm.
in my first law office and Attorney De La Cruz guided me in everything when I was starting in private practice. They became my mentors. They checked my work multiple times. When I print out a draft, for leading or any submission to court, I would give it to them for checking. And my draft would look very bloody because of the red ball pens. It's full of corrections, encircling, and comments. And sometimes if the draft is finished, I cannot even recognize my work anymore. But before court hearings, my mentors would require me to prepare a script of what to say in court. And they would add or give comments to my script. So especially if it is about cross-examination or an oral argument in court.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, my experience was very hard and stressful because of most of those things are not taught in law school. Those are new to me and new to private practice. But I am very grateful for the guidance of my mentors, and I can say that I survived, and I still try to survive in private practice because of the guidance and help of my mentors.
Attorney Kyle, a lot of lawyers are always talking of their baptism of fire in court. What was this moment for you?
So like I said in the previous questions, I would say that I'm very privileged even that I'm able to do it with my father for the first few years of being a lawyer. And I think the first thing that will come to my mind when we ask baptism of the fire was the first case that I handled from really start to finish with him. So it was a criminal case and we were able to handle it from the beginning until the end. And baptism of the fire, because I think I was a new lawyer then. Let's say I entered, I was admitted to the bar June of 2018. I think this was around August or September. So I was just a 3-month, 4-month old lawyer. And he trusted me enough to put me out there and then do the direct examination, redirect, the cross examination, the entire thing. So that's a good thing about that, because when the idea or when the theory is so fresh to you because you're a new lawyer, and then you get to practice it right away. Because I've heard stories of lawyers that get to do this at least after a year, 2 years. No? So that time, I would consider it baptism of the fire because I was fairly new, just a month old. And I did that and he was there supervising. But that's a good thing also about my father, because he knows how to separate his being a father and being a mentor. Because as a father, of course, he's very protective. No, even just small things because we're girls, we're daughters. As a mentor, he allowed me independence and freedom, right? Believing that you can do it, because he was not very on the details. He was just do it and you would know what to ask when you're there. Was just giving me pointers, and I was able to do that. And the good thing also is the judge where we appeared was a bit meticulous also, but he was very he was guiding new lawyers.
Okay, now that we're talking about cases and your practice, Attorney Karen, I am curious about how your first appearance went in court. Tell us about it. Was it nerve-wracking like how we imagine it?
Actually, up to now, every court appearance is, I still find it nerve-wracking. I think it just goes with experience. So, but if I can recall the experience which I think I find most challenging is when I appeared for a criminal case here in Roja City, because I'm based in Mambusao. So it's a pro bono estafa case, and it's my first time cross-examining a witness. So that's one of the most challenging part of the practice, I think.
Attorney Ryan, can you tell us about the first case that you handled? Like, how was the experience?
Actually, the first case that I have handled, as far as I could remember, was an interstate proceeding. It's okay. An interstate estate of a certain person, right? Somewhere in the northern part of Iloilo. The case has been running for three decades, I guess.
Wow. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And mind you, it's still there. For 3 years, I have not finished it. It's still there because there are legal processes that mm-hmm. must be done, mm-hmm. especially with this kind of case mm-hmm. that you cannot really help, but that would really delay the proceedings. Yeah. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. Hate to say that, but the sad reality in the legal pressure or the legal processes of our country.
Okay, so like it's been 33 years now?
Yeah, even more probably. Uh-huh. 3 decades or 4 decades, I'm not really sure.
So you were a champion debater in law school, Attorney Sal. Did this help you in the real court setting?
Well, I can say that it helps give you confidence
okay.
in oral advocacy in court, mm-hmm. in writing pleadings. But court litigation and debate are two different animals. I personally had to let go of my debater attitude when I am in court, especially when conducting cross-examination of a witness, mm-hmm. because I believe I am more effective as a cross-examiner if I do not argue with my witness and I act as a gentleman at all times in court.
Now, the next set of questions might be too personal, but a lot of aspiring lawyers might be curious about this. Attorney Kyle, please share with us the feeling of receiving your first attorney's fees.
Okay. I cannot really pinpoint exactly how I felt, because I was not really keeping tabs of, this is my first decision. Like, I was not so, what you call that, sentimental about it. Like, I didn't really say, oh, this is my first acceptance fee and all that at that time in 2018. I just remember that the feeling when I got a pay for something that I did, the feeling of being pressured, that it's really more on being pressured rather than being happy that I have money. It was not that. It was being pressured. It was pressured because you came in from a place where in law school, you read your cases because you're preparing for a recit. You're preparing for your teacher that is a bit of a scary teacher. No, you're preparing for that. You're preparing for the exams in the bar. But when you're actually doing work and litigation, you research cases because in actual application. So it felt so real that, oh, I got this amount and it feels so real now. And this is not law school, that I'll only be talking about this in recit and in exams. I'm here to apply it. And here comes a person trusting me with his life, liberty, and property even to give me hard-earned money for me to do my job. So I felt like I cannot mess this up. I have to, yes, it was more that rather than, oh, I'm so happy, I will spend this. It was not a joyous thing. It was more of the burden coming in slowly to you and saying that, oh, I cannot mess this up. I have to do well because somebody trusted me.
Attorney, how did you spend your first attorney's fees, or did you actually spend it? Attorney Karen?
Actually, I don't recall how I spent my attorney's fees, but funny thing is, if I can share it with you, as far as I can remember, the first fees that I received as a lawyer are a bunch of vegetables and a native chicken. So if you're asking me how I went on about it, I brought it to Miag'ao again with my family and we cooked it.
Attorney Ryan, can you tell us about your best attorney's fees or the attorney's fees that were paid in kind?
Actually, this is the first time that I heard about attorney fees.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, never heard about that. I don't know if it's common, but I've never heard about it. So thank you for that anyway. There are actually lots of fees that were paid in kind.
Mm-hmm.
There are seafoods,
Wow.
Live chickens, right? Crabs. But I guess the best attorney feeds that I can say that I have received were fruits.
Fruits.
Oh, I actually love fruits, mangoes.
Okay.
Pomelo.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, you're giving us and the listeners an idea.
Yeah. Nice. So for me, those were the best attorney feeds that I have ever gotten from my clients.
So, Attorney Sal, what was the first major purchase that you made with your attorney's fees?
A laptop. I bought a laptop. Not a very expensive laptop, but a basic one.
Mm-hmm.
This was my first major purchase when I passed the bar because I had no laptop at that time. Mm-hmm. And I believe that a laptop was absolutely necessary for me as a young lawyer because if you have a laptop, you can work anywhere, mm-hmm. at home, at your office, or even in court.
Or in coffee shops or whatever.
Yes.
You're a mobile. Yes.
You guys have been in practice for 3 years already. Mm-hmm. If there is one field of the law that you would want to specialize in, what would this be?
Oh, okay. As of the moment, I think I cannot really pinpoint exactly just one because actually, if you look at it, 3 years seems to be very short. It's very short because there's still so much more to learn. Like even if you're already in the 10th year of your practice, you would still say there's more to learn. That's why it's called practicing because nobody can perfect it. That's what the dean says. And that's true. So in my sense, I could not really say that I know everything in the 3 year span. I feel like I'm still a young lawyer. Wow. Okay. And but if there's anything that I want to specialize, that really specialize, that focus my attention on, is something that I'm passionate about because it's a good thing also that I was given that opportunity when I teach in the College of Law, when I'm teaching, is media law. Because I'm teaching media law here in San Agustin, so late in the College of Law. And I'm very passionate about it because my undergraduate degree is media. And it's like mixing your two love in one setting, right? So I'm passionate about it and I would like to explore more on that.
Moving on to the next question. What was the most difficult case that you've handled so far, Attorney Karen?
In my perspective, every case is difficult because each has its own. You have to focus and, you know, really study about it. So it's difficult in a way because you will never know what is the backstory of that case because sometimes your client will just tell you his or her side of the story. So you will find out later that it's not really that side of the story only. So, you know, when you practice, you will have to deal with aspects or all facets of the case. You will have to open yourself to that, the other side or the opposite story so you can properly defend a client's case. And going back to the question, I think still the case which I find more challenging is the pro bono case which I handled, which was served by the IBP charter, the Estafa case I was telling you, which is here in Roja City. So aside from the first struggle is the distance because I was still training coming then. So it did sacrifice of time and effort because I have to travel almost 2 hours for each hearing. So that's it. And also because the case is criminal in nature, so we're not just talking about property, we're talking about a person's liberty. So I think it's challenging, especially if you know that your client is a mother, is someone relies on them. So there are a lot of things which you will consider. And at some point, I don't know if it has also with other lawyers, but at some point there will come a time that you will find yourself a little attached to the case or to the client. That you know you have I think instead of being logical, you're being a bit emotional about it.
One of the characteristics of private practitioners is that they can handle any type of criminal cases, whether it is for the accused or private complainant. Attorney Ryan, what do you say to people who say that you are defending criminals?
All right. First of all, we have actually to differentiate between criminals and those who are accused.
Okay.
So if the case is still in court, most likely they are still accused or suspects, so to speak, right? And accused, when you say accused, their guilt have not been proven yet, all right? So until their guilt are proven, then they're considered innocent. But mind you, even if their guilt have already been proven, you know, criminals are also people, you know, like us. Whether you have done something wrong or you have done nothing wrong, right? Everybody actually has a right or has rights, which actually, to me, us lawyers have the duty to protect or to defend, all right? So nothing personal about it. We're just doing our job, right?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's a straightforward answer.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, Attorney Sal, we heard that you once represented a person accused of swindling. Fortunately for him, he was acquitted. This may sound absurd, but did you feel glad that you were able to have somebody acquitted of a crime?
Yes. I felt glad because I believed my client was innocent.
Okay.
And I was happy that the court believed my client's cause. Because in my opinion, the case is civil in nature. So we believe that the criminal case for swindling had no legal leg to stand on. So we felt glad that the court believed our theory and believed our client's defense. And because I believe the judge was also well-read, and she understood that the case was purely civil in nature. That is why my client was acquitted.
Attorney Kyle, if there is one practical lesson learned while you were appearing in a court case, what would that be?
Okay. So many things that is very practical that you can apply in your, well, in your daily life. I think the best thing that I can say would be to be prepared. Like to be really prepared, to be two steps, three steps ahead in the level of preparation, because well, in private practice, I think most of the private practitioners would agree with me, not everything can be controlled by you. There are so many things that may be out of your control, and it will always surprise you. So you will only be so surprised if you're not prepared. So the good thing about it is you can prepare for it. And it's very practical, right? In any, well, what you call this, in any aspect of our lives, we can use that. You have to be prepared when things get out of hand. You have to be prepared when things go out of your control. You have to be, in a way, you would know what to do because you're supposed to know what to do. And that's litigation for us. And when you appear in court, no? It's very litigious. That's why it's called litigation. You have an adverse party. You have an opposing counsel who is also equally as prepared as you. Sometimes the opposing counsel is your teacher in law school, diba? And the judge is also probably your teacher. So everyone is prepared that a misstep would cause a big thing and probably injustice to your client. So you really have to be prepared.
They say greenhorn. Our new lawyers will have funny moments in court. What was that for you, Attorney Karen?
I think there are numerous times with funny moments when we're talking about funny moments. But some of them, one, I can share with you one. When I was supposed to say permission to leave, but I said, I think, petition or motion to leave.
the court, which the judge also, I think, was not able to hear so well. So she just said granted. But I just realized that I said the wrong word when I got out of the court. And when I shared it, I was laughing too. And I think another funny moment is when you find yourself still reciting in court, the judge, when the judge asks you and you can't really, you're just dumbfounded and you can't answer the question. So I think that's one funny moment because, you know, you just recall yourself being in a classroom, being asked by a professor, and then still in recitation and you can't really answer what his questions the way he wants it to be answered. So,
Attorney Ryan, like in any other professions, private practice has its ups and downs. Was there ever a time when you told yourself you need to apply for a job in government?
Yes, actually, in my 3 years of practice, I've thought of joining the government service, but it's not because of the ups and downs in the private practice, not at all, because I've told you I really wanted to be in private practice, right? Not because of the ups and downs, but most likely because of myself.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be candid about this. I'll be honest, right? Sometimes I'm not really that industrious. I'm kind of lazy to do things and stuff that I need to do. And when I'm not doing those things, when I'm doing other things, right, other than my duties or my responsibilities, or what they say, procrastination, right? When I do things like that, right, I'm kind of thinking that private practice is for people who are really hardworking or really industrious, you know, or really prudent or kind of want to do the things right, you know, doing their the things that they need to do before the deadline. Right? So when I think about that, yes, exactly. When I think about that, I think of joining the government service. Maybe I need to be there, you know, not because that there's no work or there's less work there, you know, but because I think that kind of mindset should be in the government service, right? But of course, I'm still here. I'm still breathing. I'm still in private practice. Maybe I'm doing something right also.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me the truth, Attorney Sal. Was there ever a time when you had no money in your pocket, even now that you are already a lawyer?
Yes. Actually, most of the time.
Really?
Private practice is not a stable job, you know. It does not have a regular income. And unlike a government lawyer, like, for example, in the PAO or any government agency, they have a regular income, 15-30. They expect their salary to come into their bank accounts. As a private practitioner, I earn money only if my clients pay for my services, like notarization, drafting of documents, but the money or the amount of money that you will earn from these services are minimal. In court appearances, you are lucky if your clients pay you before or during the hearing. Most of the time, clients pay after, a few days or even weeks after the hearing. So you really have to adjust your spending, and you have to level your expectations. Don't expect that you will earn large amounts of money in an instant when you start in private practice, especially when the pandemic started and the courts and our offices were forced to close. I had no income for almost 6 months because of the lockdown, and now because of recurring lockdowns, we only have few clients going to our office, and the courts most of the time postpone hearings. So yes, I experience financial challenges even now that I am a lawyer.
How does an attorney survive with such financial challenge? I'm just really curious about that. Like 6 months?
Yes. The they say private practice is like it's like seasonal job.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a regular paying job. So sometimes if the season is good, so mm-hmm. you earn a lot, so you save your money. Mm-hmm. You don't spend it in one. When you earn a lot of money, mm-hmm. don't spend it in one day or in a month. You try to save some certain amount and you build an emergency fund. So lucky for me, I was mentored by older lawyers who are in private practice, and especially my senior partner right now, Attorney Layo. She taught me how to save money. So I survived because I prepared my finances. So even now, even if the money is not that good,
mm-mm.
I believe I can survive this pandemic because of the financial habits that I have developed as a young lawyer.
Nice. So that's somehow a life-saving hack or life hacks or like what they say, that you save for the rainy days.
Yes, that's correct.
Do you also consider looking for another source of income aside from law practice?
Yes, actually, my wife mm-hmm. bakes pastry, so I also help in selling those. So that's another source of income. So if you're a private practitioner, it's not new to have a side business. So I know a lot of lawyers who also do that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and because of my fellow lawyers and the court personnel, they also help me. Mm-hmm. They also buy the products that my wife and my brother-in-law sell. So yes, we earn on the side from other sources.
Attorney Kyle, do you see yourself still going to court and arguing before the judge, say, in 20 years' time?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's an interesting question also, because it will also make me think. No, but in the level of where I am now at present, I would say yes. I would say in a heartbeat that I still do, because that's what I like to do. I'm passionate about it.
Attorney Karen, if there is one thing that would change your mind and leave private practice for government service, what would it be?
About that, I think the one thing that might change my decision to go from private practice to government practice will be retirement. Because of the stability in the government service, and they're sure of retirement plans in the government. So I think maybe that's one case in point that I might consider being in a government service in the future. Not too soon now. Yeah.
Attorney Ryan, say you decided to join the government service. What job will you prefer and why?
I think everybody likes to be the judge, you know.
Okay.
To be the what do you call that? To be the god. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. If judges can hear this, I'm so sorry about that. I didn't really mean that. Yeah, I would love to be the judge, okay. But if I'm not a judge, then I would probably be a prosecutor.
Okay.
Yeah. For the main reason that I think it's cool, you know. I'm so sorry about that. I think it's cool to be a prosecutor, but to take things seriously, actually, mm-hmm. I think it's quite fulfilling, you know. To help the government in its in prosecuting not really criminals, but mm-hmm. those people who are suspected to have committed a crime, you know, or crimes. I think it's quite fulfilling to be a prosecutor, other than it's cool. So
Attorney yes. Sal, if a law student asks you now, what is one valuable advice you will give them because of your experience in litigation, what would that be?
Okay. One, only one. So maybe the best advice that we would give is to be prepared always when you go to court. Know the facts of the case, know the procedure, technicalities. Do not be afraid to ask for help or advice from senior lawyers. You can also find a mentor to help you and when you start your private practice.
Mm-hmm.
And to prepare you in litigation or in the private practice of law, you can join the clinical legal education program under the revised law student practice rule so that you can experience the practice of law even if you're still a law student. And lastly, have time to handle legal aid cases because this will prepare you and keep you grounded and give you that altruistic feeling that you are helping in the administration of justice, especially the poor and the less privileged.
There you have it, four promising young private practitioners. Guys, despite the perception that private practice has become unstable and uncertain, especially during the pandemic, how will you encourage young lawyers to go into private practice? Let us start with Attorney Kyle.
Okay, so I think the best way that I can do that would be to pose like a challenge or a question to the people listening, especially to those who aspire to become lawyers. We have been taught in law school until your first year, until you reach fourth year, that law school or lawyering is a calling. So being a calling, it has to be something, it has to come from a place higher than you. It's not just because you want to be rich, you want to be the glory. It's not that. It has to be a calling higher than you, coming from a place of purpose. Like you feel there's something that you need to do.
How about you, Attorney Karin?
Okay, so as I've said before, private practice is really rewarding. It's a different aspect of lawyering, and it's true that it comes with risks, but it also comes with a lot of opportunities. And in private practice, if you just know how to manage your time and resources, it is also as lucrative, if not more, than being in a government service. So you just have to establish your reputation as a lawyer. And it comes with being consistent, being reliable, credible, and also being efficient and punctual in when you're consulting with clients, when you're appearing in court. And I guess that's the beauty also of private practice, is you can do anything with your time as long as you just know how to manage it well. So you will be more productive. You can be more productive and efficient. And yeah, you have more leniency. You can do everything the way you want it to be, the way you think it should be with private practice. So there's more leeway, so to say, when you're in the private practice.
Attorney Ryan?
If you feel that private practice is actually for you, you know,
mm-mm,
then go for it. Don't think about what others say, that, for example, that there are ups and downs in the private practice, that it would be very difficult to be in private practice, that the salary is not consistent or the pay is not consistent, all right? Don't think about what others say. Just mind what you feel, you know? That if you think private practice is for you, then go for it, right?
Last but not the least, Attorney Sal.
Yes. I would say that the most encouraging thing in private practice for me is the freedom to do what you want. If you are in private practice, you can control your time. You control what kind of cases you will handle. Also, if you are in private practice, you can help others by handling legal aid cases without expecting anything in return. Finally, in private practice, you will have a vast array of opportunities. You can try anything, appear in courts all over the Philippines after the pandemic. You can go to a beach to meet a client, then meet or appear in court in the city in 1 week. Private practice has a lot of perks, which as a young lawyer, I believe can convince other young lawyers to try and pursue this as a career choice.
So that is our episode for tonight. Once again, I want to thank our guests, attorneys Dinopol, Kabuslay, Anatan, and Alba for sharing with us their experiences and encouraging law students and even young practitioners to choose the private practice of law.
Thank you, attorneys. Once again, this is your host, John Dale, together with George, wishing that you will follow our podcast in Coffee Veritas. We upload a brand new episode every week.
Thank you for listening to this morning's episode. In Coffee Veritas is written and produced by volunteer lawyers and law students who want to make a difference in society by sharing their legal knowledge. The opinions and views of the guests are their own perspective on the featured topic. Comments and suggestions can be sent to our email address, amicusjurispodcast@gmail.com.